Welcome to Parents' Perspective. Robbie, we're going to be late for your soccer game, his mom shouted up the stairs. Let's go! No response. His mom waited a minute, then stormed up the steps and down the hall to her son's room. 13-year-old Robbie was sitting on his bed in the dark, his head in his hands. What's the matter, hon? His mom sat down beside him. Aren't you feeling well? Robbie gave a long sigh and replied, I don't know, Mom. I just can't go play. Is something bothering you? You've seemed kind of down lately, she prodded. I don't know. I just keep thinking about Dirk and all those bombs and ambushes and things. Of course, his mom's eyes teared up. We're all frightened for your brother, and I know it's hard just to go on as though everything's normal. She gave a slight shudder. I'm not even sure what normal is anymore. From a parent's perspective, what can we do to help military families cope? I'm Sandy Burt.
And I'm Linda Perlis. Our guest herself works with families with these kinds of problems and involves others in helping as well. Dr. Barbara Romberg is a licensed clinical psychologist specializing in the diagnosis and treatment of children. She has spent her career interacting with and coordinating services within large systems, including school districts and mental health clinics. She's founder and president of Give an Hour, a nonprofit organization providing free counseling for soldiers and their partners and families. Dr. Romberg is the mother of two young daughters, 7 and 11 years old. Welcome to Parents' Perspective, Dr. Romberg.
Thank you.
What would you say is the most pressing need of military families that you've worked with?
Well, I thought a lot about that, preparing to come and talk. And really, I would say there are two different times for these military families that seem to be very difficult. One time that is very difficult for these families is the period of deployment. That what we're seeing is an increase, unfortunately, in some types of child neglect during periods of time where the spouse is deployed. It's very stressful, as in the story that you were telling, for the families when it's not only the additional strain of having to be a single parent when you're used to having a partner, but also the worry, the stress on the children and helping them cope. The other time that seems to be extremely difficult for these military families is when the mother or father returns from being deployed. And then you have the reintegration process. You have then the family. For some of these military families, it's been 15 months since the mother or father was home. So you can imagine for some of these kids, that's an eternity. And they develop new routines, and then the father or mother comes back and they want to fit back in. And it may be very hard on both sides during that time of transition.
Is it different for families that are career military than families where there's somebody in the reserves or the National Guard who's also been deployed for 15 months?
Well, I think that the career military families, they have a built-in structure, a built-in support system. They're more used to, they're more familiar with the deployments. The deployments now are much longer than before this war began. So that's a change, and that adds stress and strain. And obviously, having their loved one in harm's way is much more stressful than being deployed in a non-war zone and then coming back after a period of time. But yes, the active duty folks have a built-in structure. They know how this works. The military moms and dads who are left behind have a support system. The children are often in schools with other kids who are also military families, as opposed to the reservists or the National Guard, where this is a very new experience and the families don't have that same kind of support system.
In our opening story, we had an older brother who's been deployed. I would think that's a really tough thing for a younger brother who probably looks up to older siblings, or younger sister looking up to older siblings, having the siblings gone for that long. And they change a lot when they're young.
That's right. And it's extremely stressful for the kids left behind. And now, unfortunately, so many are coming back injured that it's a very difficult transition for a younger child, because they're very self-centered often in a healthy, developmentally appropriate way. But they don't understand why, when their older brother or sister returns and they're preoccupied, or they're perhaps depressed, or they're distant, or they're numb, that's very difficult for the child, and they may then act out in a way that causes additional stress and strain on the family. So there are multiple pulls, multiple stressors, most of the surveys are coming back very consistently showing tremendous stress and strain for these families.
Can you explain how your nonprofit group, Give an Hour, works?
Our organization began about 2.5 years ago. We now have just about 1,000 mental health professionals nationwide who have signed on to Give an Hour. And what that means is they're agreeing to give an hour a week to provide free mental health services to military family members or military personnel themselves. They agree to stay in the network for a year to provide continuity of care. So they may see one family or one family member for an entire year. And most of them would, I'm sure, say that they will sign on to continue. They may see a number of people. We offer phone support for these families in the National Guard and reservists who may be in remote areas. We also can do things like consult to a school if there's a child who's having a hard time. I'm a child psychologist. That's my background. And I was very concerned when I began to think about forming this organization. I was really concerned about the children in these families and the impact. And I grew up in the post-Vietnam era, saw what happened to these families when people came back and were very severely changed, damaged in some ways, and the generational consequences of this. So we provide whatever kind of mental health services could be helpful to these families, either directly with the family or in the community if that's what's needed.
What motivated you to found this organization?
Well, as I said, I'm a child psychologist, so it was really a concern about the families, a concern about the children, and also as I started to hear stories about these men and women coming back, it was clear that we were going to have a hard time as a nation integrating these folks back into our society, caring for them. And then really the issue that tipped it for me that made me decide, okay, I've got to do something, was really my own daughter's awareness. When she was 9, she saw a homeless veteran, and we often would talk about the homeless population and how sad it was. And she said to me, you know, how can our country let this happen to these people who served our country? And I just thought, oh, we can't let this happen again. And that was really the push that I said, all right, I want to make sure that they see that we're doing something for these folks.
We'll take a short break now and be right back to continue our discussion on helping military families cope.
The popular new book, Raising a Successful Child, Discover and Nurture Your Child's Talents, by Sandra Burt and Linda Perlis, is available at all major bookstores and on the web.
Welcome back to Parents Perspective. We are talking with Dr. Barbara Romberg about helping military families cope. Can you give some examples of the kinds of cases that you've been seeing?
Well, we're hearing a variety of concerns from family members who will write to us. One big difficulty, concern for them is how do they encourage a loved one to get help? That's a very common issue that we're being asked. And actually, we now are providing a column on our website, which is www.giveanhour.org, written by experts in the field. And I asked one of our experts, who is a veteran and a psychologist himself, if he could write a column about this issue. How do you help a loved one who the spouse or the parent can see that this person is struggling, and yet they seem to be uninterested or unwilling to get help? So that's a huge problem that we're seeing and hearing about. Another is hearing from spouses who are overwhelmed because their husband or wife is deployed. The worry, the constant worry, their own anxiety, the awareness that they're not doing such a great job taking care of their family, and the guilt that they feel, or the guilt they feel if they're home having a good time, knowing that their loved one is in harm's way.
Are you finding that anything is different in those two examples of problems between the career military and people who are in the reserves and the National Guard?
I think because the level of stress is so great because of the combat experience that I'm not really seeing a difference in those kinds of issues. Both active duty and reserve and guard are all experiencing these kinds of difficulties. As we continue to study the situation more, we may find that there's a greater increase in terms of stress and concerns. But we know that the divorce rate is up dramatically. I think it was up 40% from 2001 to 2004. Substance abuse is up. So it's clearly affecting all branches of the military.
Are we having an issue with people who are career military feeling that there's a black mark on their record if they go get psychological help?
Luckily, there are many, many efforts in the military now. There are some really wonderful programs. One in particular is with the Air Force, where they have developed a suicide prevention program that is just an amazing program where they are, from the top down, encouraging the leadership. They're doing education at all levels. They're involving clergy and mental health professionals. And they've seen a dramatic decrease in suicide and suicide attempts. And one of the things that they are doing, which made me think of that when you asked the question, that if someone is suicidal, historically, people in the military can't talk about that because a suicide attempt can actually be seen as a crime in the military because it endangers the unit. So the Air Force took that and they said, well, we have to do something to make sure that people who are suicidal can ask for help. So they allow for a certain amount of confidentiality, which is brand new, and it's working. People who, if they're feeling suicidal, they can have anonymity during that period of time that they're in crisis. So yes, some people still feel reluctant to seek help, and yes, some commanders do not handle those situations well. We are hearing, obviously, many stories. But the military is doing a far better job than they've ever done before. And there's a lot of room for organizations now like ours to add additional support. And they're welcoming that. And that's new.
Are there ways that extended families can be involved in helping the immediate family?
You know, it's interesting that in the military, often it's the extended family that is the primary family, if you will. Many of these families, it's grandparents who may be raising these young men and women who go off to war. And historically, those folks haven't had access to care through the military. Grandparents or siblings of folks who serve, who may be a critical support system, haven't had access. That's one of the reasons why we founded the organization the way we did, that all members of military families, whatever their relationship, can receive services, and that's a way often that they can be of help to their loved one. Sometimes they need to get some help in sorting through, how can I help my brother, my sister? He or she seems distant or removed. They seem to be more anxious. I don't understand this. Often if the loved one, the family member, goes and gets some consultation themselves, some help themselves, they can provide more help to the person who's experienced combat.
How do people who, of course, aren't listening to us or haven't seen some of the publicity that's come out on your organization, how do people find Give an Hour?
Well, now, luckily, because we do have a relationship building with the Department of Defense, our information will soon be given to military personnel at various points of contact as they return to the U.S., and that's going to be a huge benefit to those families. We also have a lot of relationships now with many of the veteran service organizations, such as the National Military Family Association, and those organizations know about us. One organization that is just a tremendous asset, tremendous resource, is called TAPS. They provide support to families when a loved one dies in the war. TAPS stands for Tragedy Assistance Program for Survivors. And Bonnie Carroll is the founder and president of that organization. And Bonnie and I met and have formed a partnership. So TAPS often, when they're working with a family and there's someone who clearly is in need of counseling, in addition to the peer support, they contact us. We find a provider for them, and they then get additional support. So there's a lot of veterans organizations that know about us now.
What advice would you give to spouses, siblings, and parents or grandparents of active duty or just released military troops?
To be mindful, to learn as much as they can about the process of reintegration, meaning that each person coming back may experience what happened in combat differently, and to be sensitive, mindful, to not expect the same person coming home who they said goodbye to and they sent off to this war. To look for signs that the person may be struggling, to listen, to be present, to honor that person's needs to either talk sometimes or perhaps sometimes to not talk, to try and understand that if that person who's come back, whether it's a spouse or a child, is not able to give much, that doesn't mean that they won't in the future be able to reengage and have the relationship that they once did. So there's a lot of understanding that the folks back home need to develop as they welcome their loved ones back.
And a lot of need for patience. It sounds like you really have to wait and let the person have some time.
Yes, and to keep an eye on them. We're seeing a dramatic increase in PTSD, depression. Mm-hmm. We're expecting about a quarter of the folks who have been deployed will show some significant signs of mental health difficulties. And that's 375,000 that we expect will have some serious need for some kind of mental health support or intervention.
PTSD is post-traumatic stress
disorder. And one of the things I'd like to say about that, because I think this is a critical point, this is a reaction, a condition, if you will, to horrific events. We call it a disorder, and there's a lot of discussion now about whether that's an appropriate use of the term. Because what happens to these folks when they experience these horrors, these traumas, is what would happen to most of us. That this is a normal reaction to abnormal circumstances. It's much more likely to become a chronic mental health condition, a chronic mental health illness, if it's not treated. If the individual who has experienced that trauma isn't given the opportunity, isn't given help in processing what happened to them, then it can become a chronic mental illness. But I want to make that distinction because I think it helps families and individuals recognize this is what, in a way, we should expect. This is not abnormal, but we need to welcome these folks and help them get the support they need so it doesn't turn into a mental illness.
We'll take a short break now and be right back to finish our discussion on helping military families cope.
For an audio CD of any parent's perspective show, send a check or money order for $15 with your name, mailing address, and phone number to Parents Perspective, P.O. Box 42283, Washington, D.C., 20015.
Welcome back to Parents Perspective. We're talking with Dr. Barbara Romberg, founder and president of Give an Hour, about helping military families cope. How is counseling different for the military than we might find it in civilian life?
That's an interesting question. I think that it's different in more in the sense that the culture is different in the military and that we need to, again, think about counseling as being an opportunity to help these folks process what happened to them, as opposed to some people who come to see me in my private practice. They have conflicts that they're trying to figure out and resolve. Maybe that stems from things that happened in their childhood. Maybe it stems from difficulties in relationships in adulthood. But they're conflicts that they're figuring out. How do I feel about this? What do I want to do? What are things that I feel that I may not understand about this? And how can I make changes? That's very different. When we're working with somebody who has been traumatized, it's not a conflict that we're resolving for them. This doesn't come because maybe dad was very harsh in their childhood or mom was unavailable or some of the things that we think about do affect all of us. This is about helping them process events that not only shaped their perceptions of themselves and the world, but also affected how their brains function.
In my family, we had a young man who came back from being in the war with a shoulder injury. He's not from the Washington area where we are, but he was treated in this area. Shoulder injury you can treat. Mm-hmm. It's a physical injury. But the post-traumatic stress problems that he had are lasting longer and are more difficult. After all, he's back. He's not being sent overseas again, but he has to go to work. He's a grown-up. It's pretty tough.
It's very difficult.
See that. I also know another young man who was involved in the Lebanon problem a few years ago. He saw a best friend die and other tragedies. Apparently, he doesn't talk about it and is having difficulty, I think, even with treatment.
And both of those are examples of the impact that this kind of war, the impact of this experience can have on folks. There are 30,000 people who have been physically injured. What we don't often think about is, in addition to the physical injury that they suffered, there's also the psychological trauma that goes with that injury of being hit by a bomb or a sniper. In addition to that, we're seeing 20%, maybe more, but at least 20% now of the soldiers returning who have traumatic brain injuries. So not only do you have the trauma of going through these experiences of seeing buddies die, of seeing civilians killed, just the horror of the war experience, but these folks are repeatedly exposed to IEDs, which causes repeated concussions. An IED is an improvised explosive device. If you think about an individual riding around in one of these Bradley fighting vehicles, it's like being inside a can, you know, a very well-protected can, but there's an explosion 50, 100 yards away, so the individual is protected, but it is literally like this can is shaken with severe blast waves, and what we're seeing is basically the effect of repeated concussions, which results in mild to moderate brain damage. Some people recover. Other people are left with confusion, more of a difficulty focusing, headaches, maybe hearing loss. It seems like, okay, well, if that's what you come out of the war with, that's not too bad. Well, you could have lost a limb or lost your life, but it severely impairs their ability to return to normal functioning.
Have you found any differences between male versus female counselees in your practice?
Well, there certainly is a difference in experience for women in the military and men in the military. Women in the military come in already having to prove that they're strong enough, tough enough to be there. It still is a male-dominated career choice, even though, again, lots of advances, lots of improvements, lots of efforts by the military to keep working on that, but there it is. And so women who are experiencing stress, distress, signs or symptoms have a very difficult time coming forward. They're showing up at the VA in numbers that suggest they're at least either being diagnosed more frequently with PTSD in terms of the representation of the women compared to men in the VA system, but we don't know yet if that's because they tend to be diagnosed more frequently with PTSD because they're women or because they really are experiencing it more often than the men. I think we need more research to understand that. The other thing that is really very sad and tragic is that women in the military, more often than men in the military, are the victims of sexual abuse in the military. So, for example, at the VA, in a period of time that was studied, 20% of the women who sought help at the VA sought help for sexual trauma, whereas only 1% of the men seeking help had been sexually traumatized. So that's a huge difference and one that we need to be very mindful and sensitive about.
Dr. Romberg, for our listeners who want to pursue some of these issues further, what resources would you suggest?
There are several websites that I would suggest. The first is the National Military Family Association, which is www.nmfa.org. Another organization that we partner with is Vets for Vets, www.vets, V-E-T-S, the number 4, V-E-T-S, .us. As you can imagine, that's an organization where veterans are reaching out to assist the returning veterans of this generation. TAPS, which I mentioned earlier, the Tragedy Assistance Program for Survivors, is at www.taps.org. An organization that we've done a lot of work with in terms of thinking about resources that are needed, sharing resources with our providers, is the National Center for PTSD. The website for the National Center is www.ncptsd.va.gov, G-O-V. And finally, the Deployment Health and Family Readiness Library. A lot of good resources there for families dealing with deployment. www.deploymentalhealthlibrary.fhp.osd.mil. And if you Google any of those names, you'll come up with additional information about those organizations. There are a few books that I'd like to mention that I know of personally are good resources or are books that others have recommended to us. One is called Heart of a Hawk, One Family's Sacrifice and Journey Toward Healing. Another book is called Life After Deployment, Military Families Share Reunion Stories and Advice. Surviving Deployment, A Guide for Military Families. And a book that we happen to know this author personally, it's called Accepting the Ashes. And it was written by a daughter of a Vietnam veteran who wrote this book to help other families understand what that experience was like for her growing up with a father who had post-traumatic stress disorder and her family's healing. The last book I'd like to mention is going to be reviewed soon on our site, but has been discussed by several of our providers as being very helpful and very worthwhile for families experiencing deployment and reintegration. And it's called War and the Soul. The subtitle is Healing Our Nation's Veterans from Post-Traumatic Stress Disorder.
Well, Dr. Barbara Romberg, you have certainly helped us begin a journey of trying to help our military and help families and understand about the importance of trying to heal after so much trauma. So thank you so much for being with us today.
Thank you very much.
Our gift for our first caller is an autographed copy of our latest book, Raising a Successful Child. Discover and nurture your child's talents. Just call us toll-free at 1-800-791-8573 with your name and mailing address. Again, that's 1-800-791-8573. And please spell anything that's not obvious. That's a big help to us. Mention show number 357 and tell us, if you can, what station you're listening to.
Visit our website, www.parentsperspective.org, where you can even listen to a show of your choice. This is Sandy Burt and Linda Perlis. We're glad you could share Parents' Perspective. Today's program was made possible with generous support from the SF Foundation. Our sound engineer is Drew Chapp. Music for this program was composed and performed by Jonathan Burt.